Hello and welcome to the Dynasty Football Insiders. This is Paul and I'm joined by Chris.
What's up, everybody?
And Chris and I have been involved in the Dynasty Fantasy Football community for about 7 years now. And we've been playing fantasy football for a lot longer than that. We actually met each other at a fantasy football draft many years ago. And today we'll be covering our first episode, which will be the NFC West, and we're going to do a division review as far as go over projections for the standings and for the rosters, the 53-man rosters, who we think will make cuts as far as the skill position groups and how that will affect your dynasty football rosters, whether it's your top-end players or it's depth players that you're in for the long haul. So we'll start off with the NFC West division standings, and I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks taking the division this year with 12-4, and the Rams, the LA Rams, finishing with a wild card, 11-5, the Cardinals finishing 5-11, and the 49ers finishing 3-13. What are you going to go with, Chris?
Well, Paul, I'm going to change your standings a little bit here. You know, top two are going to be the same with the Rams and Hawks, but I got the Rams on top. It's just based off of last year, them coming out as strong as they did, winning the division. I think they'll repeat winning the division. I don't think they'll necessarily be as hot as they were, but I could see them finishing 11-5, potentially 12-4 to win, to, you know, and come out on top. And then I got the Hawks in second place with a potential wild card berth at 10-6, maybe 9-7. You know, just a few close games here and there for them that I see in the future. And then I actually have the Niners coming in at third, finishing at a weak 6-10, potentially 7-9, but 6-10 is where I see them falling. And then the Cardinals, new head coach, new offensive system, rookie quarterback, I got them finishing 4-12.
Okay. So basically, we'll get started now with the Seahawks, and we'll go through a look at their skill positions on the depth chart and how preseason may help these positions unfold as far as who makes the roster and who ultimately you should be looking at for your dynasty roster. We will start at the quarterback position, where we have Russell Wilson, who's entering his eighth season, and he's become a super flex stud in dynasty fantasy football. And overall, just a very consistent performer. Last season, he had a 110.9 passer rating, which was the best of his career. And he also had an 8.2% touchdown rate, which is additionally the best in his career. With the remaining seasons averaging out at 6% touchdown percent. So a lot of people think that he could have a regression there. However, I think he will stay right in that 8.2% range and just have a really good season again. I think he's building each year. He continues to develop with his receivers in the offseason, traveling down to Southern California and training with them for weeks. And all we've heard out of training camp is that he's looked better than ever. So the real question is, who will be on the roster behind him, whether it's Paxton Lynch or Geno Smith? And those are names that we could really only look at in deep super flex leagues as reserves. Who do you have out of those two?
Between Lynch and Geno, I've got Lynch coming out on top of that battle. I think he's just overall the more consistent, or not consistent, but maybe well-rounded quarterback between him and Geno. With Lynch only being in the league, this will be his fourth season. He didn't really have a whole lot of time to shine in Denver. Wasn't really given, I think, the best coaching there. And change of scenery in Seattle, new coaching staff, and learning from Russell Wilson is definitely going to be beneficial to him there. Geno Smith, now in his seventh season, you know, he's bounced around already, hasn't quite lived up to the potential, and just I don't see the football IQ in him that I see in Lynch, and I think that's where Lynch is going to get the edge in this battle.
And I actually agree with you on that take. I think that Paxton Lynch will be the backup quarterback in Seattle, and you know, they both offer a similar skill set, just in that they're mobile quarterbacks.
Right.
They can extend the play. They can run for the first down. Paxton, actually, in their Thursday night first preseason game, he ran for a touchdown, and Geno ran for a couple first downs. The key difference I see between them is I think Paxton is a bit more of a polished passer.
Yeah, he's a little more self-aware when he's in the pocket, looking downfield, looking, you know, to read his options, go through and look through the field to see where the play could potentially, where it's either supposed to go or where it could go if it doesn't go according to the play called at the line.
And I think, you know, for the first preseason game, Geno ran the first half, Paxton ran the second half. So their level of competition, the defense was a little bit different. But I know that on two long balls that Geno threw intended for DK Metcalf, their rookie receiver, that were right in front of him, right off his fingertips where he was fully extended. They would have been fantastic catches had he made them, and he probably could have made the catches, but they were a little overthrown. And I think that, you know, definitely during the season when Russell Wilson's playing, those will be right in DK's chest, right? Russell's one of the best long ball throwers in the league. So I think just as far as touch, I think Paxton has a better arm, and I think Geno sometimes misses the open man. On both of those plays, DK had beat his man. So that's why I'm going to go with that. We're going to go directly into the running back position for the Seahawks. And the real battle that, you know, affects all dynasty rosters would be the battle between Chris Carson and Rashad Penny, where Carson has been the starter for the last year and a half, and Penny was actually a first-round draft pick last year for the Seahawks. So the difference between these two is Carson's more of a grinder. He doesn't have the home run speed that Penny does, but he really has great vision, cutback ability, and he can run with, you know, a ton of power. Penny, on the other hand, last year he didn't really show it other than here and there. He would have burst plays. He had a ton of spark plays where he'd, you know, he could flip the whole field. He had the breakaway speed, but he just didn't show the comfort running the ball and some of the skills that you develop as a pro.
Right. And what I saw out of Penny, really, you know, he definitely showed his speed, his burst there when he was able to find the hole. But I think it's really what hurt him was his awareness to find the hole. He, you know, if you go back and watch some of the footage, he really kind of had to scramble a little bit in the backfield and wait for that hole to open up, or totally just, you know, run east to west rather than north to south, which is where Carson shines in the north to south. He's definitely the bruiser. Granted, when you're, you know, a heavier set back, it's a little easier to be the ground and pound guy. But at the same time, Carson's got the speed, he's got some speed to go with it. And that's where I think he's right now currently got the edge on Penny. You know, something definitely to look at, to watch out for is, you know, that's definitely going to be a battle to watch this season. But I don't see Penny dethroning Carson maybe until later in the year, and, you know, week 8, week 9, with maybe a potential injury to Carson, or if Penny really just, it starts to click with him.
And I think that ultimately, I think Penny wins the job in Seattle. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, you know, going into the season, it's going to be a two-headed monster. It's going to be Chris Carson. It's going to be Rashad Penny. They're going to switch series. They're going to do a great job. Just Seattle runs the ball. They run it hard. Last season, Chris Carson averaged 4.7 yards a carry. Rashad Penny averaged 4.9 yards a carry. They both had over a 20% first down percentage on their carries. Very efficient, effective runners. Penny's a bit more of a receiving back. He has really good hands. He showed that a lot in college at San Diego State. But I think he can also do that at this level. He's shown that last year as well as in the preseason week one with a 27-yard reception as his first catch. I think Carson right now, he's just with a few injuries this offseason with the knee and things here and there. He's given Penny more opportunities throughout offseason workouts, training camp to work with the first string. You know, it could take an injury, like you said, but I think he is the better athlete, the better pro prospect, and ultimately will become the guy you want to own in dynasty.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, with that take as far as Penny being the better overall athlete between the two and the prospect to have, absolutely. I'm not gonna argue that at all. But, yeah, you're right. It's going to be one of those things that's going to take time, I think, before Penny really steps up and becomes the number one back that everybody kind of has foreseen. Even with the injuries, though, that Carson has kind of suffered already in the preseason, but training camp and what have you, OTAs, from what I've seen, I haven't seen Penny take full advantage of that working with the first team.
And he's gotten rave reviews from some of the coaches out of training camp, but sometimes you don't know how, the truth of that, or if they're just talking up a former first-round pick.
Right, especially this early into the training camp and into preseason. You know, it's going to be definitely things to watch out for in the next coming weeks, and then especially leading up to season kickoff week one there.
Right. And I agree. So I mean, I think both of us agree that those two are going to be, you know, both be effective. You can start both of them in your dynasty rosters. You know, one of them may end up being a flex. And then as things settle down, ultimately you want to get Penny if you can have a handcuff and have both of them.
Yeah.
And I think Carson, I don't think he's an immediate sell because he's still young. He's only in his third year in the league and he's been talented, and he's actually, you know, from the coaches, they've been saying he's looked really sharp when he has been, you know, performing in off-season activities.
Right.
So behind those two,
I mean,
that's where there's going to be guys that are, you know, obviously going to be cut, and we're looking at guys, the sixth-round pick this year, Travis Homer out of Miami, 4.48 40 at the combine, 39.5-inch vertical, 130-inch broad, very athletic guy. He's 5'10", 201, so he's a smaller guy, but he could be more of – he's definitely a special teams guy that they've said can play, you know, on all sorts of special teams, covering kicks and blocking and just all those things, as well as could be a third down back and a change of pace guy that they have as a depth running back. So I think with his ability on special teams and being a depth running back, I think his spot as one of the third or fourth running back on the team, I think he's probably one of the guys that I'd say is safest other than Penny and Carson.
You're not wrong per se as far as just the potential based on his athletic ability that we've seen and his measurables, but I still got a soft spot for CJ Procise. I know you hear it every year, you know, Procise, oh, this is going to be the year. But just the early word coming from Pete Carroll and out of camp, you know, this is the healthiest Procise has been since he's entered the league.
Well, and he's injured again, though.
Is he now?
He's already injured again. So I think Procise, I mean, he was a guy that I loved coming out of Notre Dame in 2016, and, you know, he converted receiver that you look for him being a receiving back. He showed it his rookie season that he could catch out of the backfield, that he had the speed, he was dynamic, but he just has really struggled. And, you know, there was off-season talk from Pete Carroll saying that he's healthy, he looks great, but then he's been injured again, couldn't play in week one of preseason. And I think that's just kind of it for Procise for me. I think, you know, he may latch on somewhere else, and if he can stay healthy there, he could turn into something. But if, for me, I think he's going to be cut this offseason by the Seahawks unless he ends up on the IR or something. So I ultimately, I think it's going to be between, You know, I think Homer would be the third back, and I think McKissick, if he's healthy, who he also missed the first preseason game, but if he's healthy, I think he's going to be the guy that's more of a reliable third down back who knows the system, who's been around, who's been healthier. And I think those would be the four running backs, potentially keeping Nick Ballore the fullback. And then Bo Scarborough's actually been mixed in too, and I think he'll end up being cut as well. Could be a practice squad candidate, probably a cut. But that's my take on the running backs. And I think ultimately, I think Penny and Carson are the guys you want to own. If you're in a real deep league, maybe Homer. And that's about it for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, and just to touch back on the Penny-Carson duo, you know, just on what you had touched on earlier, Paul, with, you know, starting both of them, is I don't know if the potential is there necessarily to start both. It's, you know, you always open up a whole can of worms when you've got a two-headed monster in any backfield with any team. And, to be able to start, you know, whether you start Carson as your running back two and then Penny as a flex, I think is a bit risky just because there are going to be better flex options where you're going to have that better consistency. You know, it's going to be one of those scenarios that you may want to wait a couple of weeks if you have both running backs before you start them, just to see how the playing time gets divided between the two of them and how each of them are performing based on that playing time. You know, if they're both,
right.
You know, if they're both putting up, you know, where they're both getting 15 touches apiece and they're both putting up 80 yards and maybe getting a touchdown here or there between the two of them, you know, then that's definitely flex play consideration for either one of them, you know, just based on the yardage alone.
And I agree. And I think ultimately it's going to come down to who they name the starter coming out of preseason.
Yep.
That's the guy that you could feel comfortable plugging in your lineup. And then just, like you said, wait a few weeks, see how things settle out. But if there's somebody obvious by, you know, say Penny overtakes Carson or Carson gets injured in the preseason and, you know, it looks like it's going to be Penny's show, then I'd feel comfortable starting him.
Mm-hmm.
If Carson's still named the guy and he's still our guy and Penny comes in for, you know, splash plays, change of pace, hoping for a spark, I'd start Carson. If like you said, if they split it pretty much down the middle and Carson's getting touchdowns, Penny's getting receptions and rushes, and they're, you know, one of the highest rated rushing offenses in the league, they
right.
could have two potential flex guys. So it could be on,
absolutely.
You know, if I had Penny and you had Carson, both of us could potentially flex them,
right?
Unless one of them determine themselves the undisputed starter,
right? Absolutely. And you know, just to even kind of touch just a slightly more on that is where the better flex play, or not necessarily better flex play, but the ability to put faith in them as a flex play, either one of them would be, you know, in a PPR format for sure, especially for Penny, because that's really where he would shine if he's not named the starter and you need a flex play. You know, that's where he could shine in that, you know, because maybe he's, you know, only getting 10 carries, but he's not, his yards per carry aren't the greatest, but he's, you know, getting 4 to 5 receptions and he's, you know, getting 30, 40 yards, you know, that's some extra needed points right there. And definitely benefit you in a PPR format more so.
And then we'll go to the receivers next. So we've covered the running backs, and the receiver group for Seattle is going to be far different than last year. Doug Baldwin retired. He's been their number one for many years now. And Tyler Lockett is going to assume that number one role. He did an awesome job last year. He's still a young guy. He's drafted in the third round, 2015.
Probably one of the better deep threats in the league.
Absolutely. And so he's the obvious number one. You want to own him. He's, a lot of people think because his touchdown percentage last year was so high that he may have some regression as well. But with him getting more looks, being the number one guy, I expect maybe the percentage might not be there, but the overall output will be higher. So he'll have more receptions, more yards, probably more touchdowns, just a lower percentage of overall receptions.
I 100% agree with that. Yeah.
So right now they're projecting DK Metcalf, the 2019 second round pick for the Seahawks, to be the number two receiver on the outside. And he's a guy that really, at the combine, he really turned heads. He ran a 4.33 40.
Dude is chucked. I mean, and he's just a physical specimen. Let's just be honest.
He is. He's huge. He's fast. He bench pressed 27 times at 6'3", 228, 40.5-inch vertical, 134-inch broad jump. The area where people kind of docked him was his route running and his three-cone. Three-cone was 7'3", 8". Doesn't have great change of direction, which affects him on his route running. And his route tree wasn't very broad. So the other areas are, you know, he's had some injuries in college. He's had drops in college. Now, Thursday in their first preseason game, he did have those two drops that were off of his fingertips. Now, granted, they were, like I mentioned earlier, you know, they were going to be fantastic catches because Geno led him a little much. But it does, you know, kind of raise the question, is this going to be something that gets in his mind? Is he going to be one of those guys where he's having drops and he, you know, he can burn the top off, but he's not consistent making the catch? Is that going to affect him? So there's some questions. It'll be good to see him rolling with Russell Wilson in weeks two and weeks three of preseason.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to, you know, have the quarterback you've been working with all offseason, the quarterback who's far superior, who's best at the deep ball, working with you. So that'll be, and the reviews from coaches and everybody have been great about DK. Red zone threat, training camp, they're feeding him the ball in the red zone. Just doing everything great. They're saying his routes are far better than people are saying they could be. So it's definitely a lot of high praise. And in dynasty leagues, I think he's a guy that you really got to look at as a potential future receiver for you. And he could actually contribute right away with their need at wide receiver.
No, absolutely. You know, you hit the nail on the head with his figures there, you know, just with based on his size, all his measurables. And yeah, I mean, that's been the biggest knock is his route running. The dude can burn the doors off the barn, but I think Lockett is going to be the true deep threat. And yeah, he may draw some of the coverage to him and leave Metcalf open, but I don't think, the deep threat is really where it's going to make Metcalf shine this year. Just based on his measurables and his just sheer physicality. Like what Paul was saying, with being a red zone threat, I think that's really where he'll shine, at least in his first, maybe second year. And that's where I think he'll definitely be more productive is when they get inside the 20 there, just because he's going to be a big, big target in the red zone for Russell Wilson, and which makes him more touchdown dependent and does hurt his stock a little bit. But in the long run, he's definitely a wide receiver to add to your lineup. In your upcoming draft, you know, he's a guy that, you know, I'd be looking at the late, you know, basically after the top five in the first round, if you're just doing an incoming rookie draft. You know, obviously if you're doing a startup league, he's a guy I'd be looking at, you know, fourth round, really, you know, maybe late third round.
I'd be looking at him deeper than that in a startup. But in terms of a rookie draft, I think he's, if it's not a super flex, he's right around that five range.
Yeah.
Five to eight, but I've seen him fall in super flexes as low as 11,
yeah, and,
which is pretty low for him.
I think five is even a little high for him. But I definitely see him definitely in that 6 to 10 range. I think is a little more is where I would feel a lot more comfortable with him. You know, granted, you know, you guys might argue, well, what's the difference between 5 and 6? Well, you know, it might be the difference of getting, you know, N'Keal Harry or somebody of that, you know, ability as well.
And he has been falling Harry with some of his injuries. But anyway, to stay on the Seahawks,
yeah.
We think DK is a top young prospect. It'll be very something you pay close attention to if you haven't already had your rookie draft. A lot of them happen in May, but if you're one of the August drafts, he's somebody you want to keep your eyes peeled on. Or even if you've already had your draft, look for potential trades depending on the other owners. The following, the depth behind those two would be you got guys like David Moore and Jerron Brown, who were both with the Seahawks last year and both actually performed well last year. And this offseason, they've both been getting a lot of hype from coaches saying that David Moore, he can play anywhere on the field. He can run all the routes. He's, you know, just being that guy that's shining this offseason. Brown, they're saying last year they realized they didn't utilize him enough. He was so efficient on the field, caught a ton of touchdowns. He was really consistent, third down guy. So they're talking about wanting to get him the ball more. A lot of it could be coach speak, but a lot of it is also just reinforcement that those guys are going to have a role on this team.
Yeah. You know, I could see Jerron Brown – filling in that slot receiver role. I think he could fit that one pretty well and be that third wide receiver option that the Hawks need.
And so they also drafted, I think Lockett, he lines up everywhere too, and he plays the slot and he goes out wide, and David Moore can do it all. Gary Jennings, fourth round pick out of West Virginia, and he's got a good athletic profile as well. 4'4", 240, 20 bench press, 37 on the vert. And he's someone that, as far as his stats go in college, he actually had, 2017, he had over 1,000 yards, 97 receptions. And then last year he only had 54 receptions, but his, average reception was 17 yards. So he went up to 917 yards and he had 13 touchdowns. So 1 year he had a lot of yards, the other year in receptions, the following year he had longer catches and a lot more touchdowns. But he's shown that he's a tough receiver. He can catch in traffic, strong hands. Week one of preseason, he didn't really do much. He was out on the field, but he played a little tentative as a rookie who, is out there for the first time. It could be a little tough, but hopefully he shows later in the preseason. I think being a rookie fourth round pick, though, I think his spot is safe on the roster. And another side note is that he, when he was younger, he actually played basketball, and Russell Wilson was his coach.
Oh, that's something I did not
know. Yeah, so there's a little bit of a family tie there.
There's a Snapple fact of the day for you.
Yeah, so... So I think he's safe. I think the other four we mentioned were safe, being Lockett, DK, David Moore, and Brown. And then I think I think if they're keeping six receivers, I think, one guy that I really like is John Ursua out of Hawaii, and he's a rookie as well. And he's a guy that they drafted because they didn't want to miss out on him in free agency. He's a guy that, he was great at getting open and had a ton of receptions in Hawaii. And he also, he had one catch here in preseason week one, 23-yard catch. But he's a guy that, I don't know if he'd be safe on the practice squad. So I think they might keep him as their sixth guy. And he could definitely be a slot type guy long term for them. I don't know if he will be right away, but long term, I think he has that potential. Mm-hmm. So they've got pieces that they can move around, and they've got depth, and it may take more than a couple guys to fill in for Baldwin. But I think, Gary Jennings and John Ursua might take a while. The other four will be, competing and contributing right away. So I think next we should get into tight ends. What do you think about the tight end group, Tim? Or Chris?
So with the tight ends, probably one of the toughest positions in fantasy football. To be perfectly honest, I'm not a big fan of either tight end. But if I had to pick one, I would probably have to go Disley, just because he has shown the flashes there. Granted, his biggest problem is he can't stay on the field.
I like Disley, and I think he's their guy, and he was drafted last year. In the first few weeks, he performed very well. He's
right
out of the University of Washington here in Seattle, and he, he's a guy he can actually block really well. He can catch really well. He doesn't have the fastest 40. He's not the most athletic guy, but he shows really well, It was his one injury, and it was a tough one to overcome, your rookie season. So they've said that he's recovered faster this offseason than they expected. And I think he's ultimately going to be their top tight end. But coaches have, Shoddy's said that it's going to be Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator, said that it's going to be a rotation between tight ends. And they like what they see in Nick Vannett, who's been the starter for a couple years. They like Ed Dixon, who's injured now and had a knee surgery. He'll be out for about 6 weeks or so. And, he could even get cut. What do you think about that?
I could see the potential of him being cut there, just with his injury history. But at the same time, you look at, he came in after Disley went down and after he served his suspension last year. And actually performed fairly well. Was actually a pretty favorite target of Russell Wilson's, especially in the red zone. But with healthy Disley and Nick Vannett getting in there, I could see Dixon playing the roster bubble game where he's fighting for a spot.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, I think Dixon either gets, ends up getting cut after he recovers, or he goes to the IR potentially, or we'll see. But he is up there in age. He did have some spark plays. He was consistent. He caught every ball thrown to him last year. He had some red zone targets and catches, as you mentioned. But they've also been talking up Jacob Hollister, and I think he'd be their third tight end that would be active that they'll have on the roster. It'd be Disley number one, Vanette coming in two, getting some reps, and then Hollister more as a depth guy, but he can also get some reps, and he's kind of a receiving tight end as well. Yeah. So that's kind of just a quick going through the Seahawks roster, and we'll see kind of how it shakes out in preseason. Obviously, Dixon won't get any looks. He's injured. Hollister should get more looks. Disley didn't play week one because they're still easing him back in, but we know he's going to be either the starter or right behind Vanette. I think in dynasty leagues, I think he's probably the best tight end to own on their team. And the Seahawks historically, and even with, Pete Carroll lately, but they've run a lot of play action to the tight end. And if they have a good receiving tight end and they have a great ground game like they have, that tight end could play a role, and he's not going to be a premier tight end in the league like Kelce and Kittle and some of those guys, but he could be a startable fantasy tight end, and he's young.
Yeah, he could be a potential top 15 tight end. Like I mentioned earlier, tight end is a really tough position to draft in dynasty formats, because it's one of those positions that you almost got to wait 3 to 4 years and see how guys develop and get used. Look at Eric Ebron. I know we're talking about the Seahawks, but just to touch on Ebron as an example, his first few years in the league in Detroit, with all the hype of being a first round pick, he really just did not do well, especially in a pass happy offense. So, but then you look, he goes to Indianapolis last year and has his best season of his career. So,
That's a good example. And he, drafted 10 overall, was a kind of labeled a bust in Detroit.
Yeah.
Looked great last year, all the touchdowns. But the thing is, Disley last year, his right out of the gates as a rookie, he performed. No, so he came out of that characteristical tight end profile where you say, hey, I gotta wait on this guy. He actually performed in his first, handful of games up to his injury. So it was really cool. So
yeah, so exactly. So, if I had to pick between Vanette and Disley, I would go Disley. Definitely aim for him in the later rounds. But he would be the one I would target, and just to kind of wait and see what he does in the next 2 to 3 years for sure. And even this year, there's a lot of potential for him this year, but I'd like to see what he does for in the next 2 to 3 years. I think he could be a viable option.
Yeah, and if he's a guy that I would own, especially in deeper leagues, you're looking at these tight ends, and you're looking at Nick Vanette only in, say you're in a 14 or a 16 team league with 30 plus man roster. Some of these real big leagues, you might want depth guys like Vanette, or even look at Hollister if you have like an off-season roster of 50 where you might see what happens, see how, preseason injuries, how all that shakes out. So those are the tight ends. Just to go over it real quick, we're saying Russell Wilson, he's obviously a dynasty and redraft stud. You want him in your lineups.
No question.
Super deep, super flex leagues. If you want a guy, we're saying Paxton Lynch. We'll see how it works out. It's only been 1 week of preseason. It's hard telling right now. Geno did get the start, but neither of them carry much value regardless. Russell hasn't missed a game in his career. So mainly it's just, if you want one, I think I'd say Paxton, just if you had a real deep roster and a super flex. Running backs, we both like Penny and Carson. We think, Penny's a good buy. He's still young, drafted first round last year. Carson's good to own. Homer, maybe a guy to own for a real deep league
and
taxi squad type guy.
And again, just to go back between Carson and Penny, I would put the higher value on Penny, just because there's a lot more potential there. He is, slightly younger. If you need to draft a running back between the two, I would go Penny and then come back to Carson if you're able to.
And then receivers, we like Lockett. We think, his receptions will improve and he's going to get a lot more work. He's going to be leaned on for that number one. We like DK. he is a guy that we want to see if he can, you know, not have drops, if he can break out, use his athleticism, be a big red zone threat, get a lot of touchdowns, but it'll be interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I just kind of go back to what I was saying earlier, is that as where he's, I think, going to shine, at least in his first year more so, will be the red zone. He's going to be very touchdown dependent, but definitely a guy that you're going to want to have on your roster in the long haul, especially if Russell Wilson, you know, like he's shown through his career, the consistency and just the ability just to play at a high elite level consistently through his career. I think him and Metcalf could very well build a very good repertoire between the two of them, and that could very well be very good for both Wilson and Metcalf in fantasy and the Seahawks in general.
And then if for your deeper leagues, if you know, if you got deep leagues and you need to potentially flex guys or have receivers that could produce this year, you're looking at guys like David Moore and Brown, and those are guys that, you know, in three wide receiver sets, you know, one of them will be out there, and those guys, they'll be in a rotation. They, you know, swap guys in and out where DK might be off the field, and both of them might be out there, or you never know how it breaks down. But they're definitely guys to keep on your radar. If you have shallow leagues, keep them on your waiver wire radar. If you're in deep league, they're probably already on a roster, but could potentially produce towards the back end of your lineup for bye week fillers or flex options. And then tight end, we just covered that, but we're taking Disley there. So next we're going to get into the LA Rams, and we'll start off with quarterback for them. And obviously they have Jared Goff, who last year really took a step forward.
Definitely.
And became a super flex stud, and he's still young, and they got brought in Blake Bortles behind him.
Yeah, no, Goff really came through last year, really showed why he deserved to be the number one overall pick just 2 years ago when he was drafted. Definitely came into his own. I was really impressed with just his awareness in the pocket. You know, and the decisions he made. Yeah, there definitely he kind of regressed slightly towards the end of the season. But I think a lot of that had to do with how defenses started playing against them and started stacking the box, which, you know, really kind of actually hindered Todd Gurley, which I think is kind of a nice little segue to really, I think we'll just kind of get into that talking point now.
Yeah, we'll get into Gurley. So for the quarterbacks, you want Goff. He was very efficient last year. Bortles was brought in to be his backup, which he should be a career backup.
Yeah.
Never deserved to really be a starter, and we learned that pretty quick in Jacksonville. Getting into the running backs, everyone knows the news with Gurley with the arthritic knee and the leading up to the playoffs and Super Bowl, limited reps.
Yeah.
C.J. Anderson getting a lot of work. Then they went ahead and drafted Daryl Henderson, and you know, the coaching staff really loves him, and you know, they see him as kind of like an Alvin Kamara type, very explosive player. So his value could potentially be high depending on Gurley's. If Gurley's healthy and is able to have, you know, he won't have the same workload he had last year.
No.
But if he has a substantial workload, which we expect he will, Daryl Henderson may be limited to begin with. But in Dynasty, you want to pay attention to him, and he's a, you know, definitely a top first round rookie pick in startup in rookie drafts.
I say rookie drafts, not startup.
But he's definitely a, you know, a guy that I've seen go as high as 2 overall. I've seen him go 11 and 12 overall as far down. But anywhere in that range, you could make a case that he could end up being the top out of this class if Gurley's knee is bad and Henderson becomes their workhorse back. Then he has that potential.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely probably the biggest question mark going into drafts this year, you know, whether it be a redraft league, a brand new startup dynasty league, you know, or even a rookie draft, you know, is Todd Gurley's knee. I mean, that's been the talking point since the Super Bowl, and nobody knows what's really going on with it, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Rams play it this year with him and what kind of production we get out of Gurley. Is it going to be the Gurley of old? Is the knee really okay like he says it is, or is it as bad with the arthritis as some of the doctors are saying it is? So it's definitely one of those situations that's going to really just kind of throw a lot of confusion, I think, with where to draft some of these players. I mean, even if you look at redraft leagues, this is one that surprised me, is I'm seeing Todd Gurley ranked at 37 overall, which is a huge drop from where he was just last year as a top five, top six running backs.
He was one of the top overall in Dynasty Startups, overall. And
he's dropping
so
quite
he
a
could
bit.
Be a huge steal if he's a guy that's
exactly.
healthy. That
yeah.
But he could also be, you know, you're taking a startup third round pick.
Right.
And he could be a guy that, hey, is his knee going to limit him from ever performing at a high level again?
So it's exactly. So in a startup dynasty, Gurley, you know, he could be the steal in the second round.
And people just don't want that risk. Risk you assume by drafting him. There is the upside, though. So it's like a lot of things. High risk, high reward.
So it's one of those things that, you know, if you're in a startup league and you're able to get Gurley, I would almost immediately try and turn around and get Daryl Henderson just so you got your bases covered. You know, definitely in a rookie draft, if you're a Todd Gurley owner, you definitely want to be talking or targeting Daryl Henderson.
And if you go with that route, Henderson's ADP has continued to go up and up to the point where you're investing, you know, in Gurley and Henderson. When you add those both of those picks together, you're investing quite a bit,
right?
And you're assuming that, hey, you'll have at least the lead dog in the LA Rams backfield,
right?
But if it is a time split and if it does limit both of them, it could be a lot of investment in something that may not be, you know, as premier as getting one top tier back or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. Then we just to go back to, you know, it's the same situation in Seattle with Penny and Carson. You kind of run into a two-headed monster scenario again.
And I like the more, you know, it is nice to get your cuff, but if you're confident in one way or the other, I like to get your guy and invest in that guy and then use another pick to get a receiver or another high running back.
Absolutely.
Or if it's something where it's so gray, like for me with the Rams, I'm not investing in Gurley or Henderson at their current costs.
No.
I'm staying away from that situation. There is a lot of value to be had, but there's also risk that I'm not willing to pay that amount for.
Right, there's a lot of risk with Todd Gurley. Like I said, that's probably the biggest question mark and the biggest cause of concern as far as running backs go in fantasy football right now.
And then behind those two, you have Malcolm Brown, who they brought back, and then John Kelly, who they drafted in the sixth round last year. And both of those guys look like guys that, you know, in deep leagues, you would want potentially to have those guys on your roster if you have a real deep league. They're guys that, you know, if Gurley's knee is bad, Henderson's going to have somebody that's helping him out and share the load. As Brown's been around, Kelly's looked good in limited action preseason last year and then preseason just tonight. And then I think those would be the four that kind of round out that backfield.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, I have a slight favor for John Kelly over Malcolm Brown, as which would probably be the number three back between Gurley and Henderson. But yeah, those are the four, definitely, no question.
And then getting into the receivers, so they have their obvious top three guys, Brandon Cooks, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods.
Yep.
And then with Kupp out last year, after he had a fantastic season leading up to his injury, especially in PPR, but with him coming out, Josh Reynolds, their fourth receiver, fourth round pick back in 2017, he kind of filled in and he wasn't quite consistent, but he actually had some real big weeks and he showed well when they targeted him enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I, you know, Brandon Cooks, he's a guy that, you know, all three of their starters you want in dynasty leagues. They're all getting tons of targets, tons of catches. It's a explosive offense, so there's a lot of points to be had.
Yep. No, and it's one of those offenses, you know, that they like to spread the ball around. But at the same time, when they the way that they spread the ball around is that everybody gets fed. You know, Cooper Kupp was one of the best receivers up until his injury as far as yards after the catch.
Mm-hmm.
And
and in PPR points overall, he was right up there, up to
exactly,
it, so per game,
you know,
basis.
So that's the thing is, you know, in a PPR league, you know, between the three, I'd be looking at Cooks and then Kupp over Woods.
That's the order I have them as well. Cooks, Kupp, Woods.
In a standard league, you know,
And I'd stay Cooks the same because Cooks, you know, he's not going to get as many receptions as Kupp,
but he's going to
get
more
touchdowns. Yeah, he's their number one guy. He's going to get long balls.
Right. No, I would still stick with Cooks as the number one Rams receiver to target in drafts, regardless if it's PPR or standard. If it's a PPR league, definitely go Kupp as the second one off the board. Otherwise, if it's the standard, I actually like Robert Woods. Just because he's actually a pretty good threat over the middle. He's got great route running, good hands. So he can break off those long yardage plays and get in the end zone, which to me gives him the slight advantage over Kupp in a standard scoring.
I think Woods is the most underrated of the three.
Absolutely.
But he definitely deserves credit too because he's been performing at a high level for a while. Cooks is entering his second year with the Rams, and I think for a guy at his age and his career, I think he could jump to the next level this year, having another offseason to work with Goff and McVay's system. I think Kupp recovering, they've talked good things about him, and he's fully back to, you know, as far as playing at full speed, so that's a good sign for him. I think all three of those guys are worth investing in at their current costs.
Mm-hmm,
Reynolds,
absolutely.
I think in a deep league, if you can get him as a throw in or if he's fairly cheap, I think he's good to own as well. As far as the, you know, other receivers that they keep right now, last year they had Hodge and Natson. They had Mike Thomas at some points last year, but I think none of those guys really stand out to me as guys that I want on my team, even if I have a real deep dynasty team. So
yeah,
I don't really have a preference out of those players.
Yeah, I mean, really outside of those four that we mentioned, you know, Cooks, Woods, Kupp, and Reynolds, the rest of the receivers on the depth chart aren't really anybody worth owning. I mean, unless you're in a super, super deep league.
And they do have four guys that were undrafted free agents from this year that they brought in that, you know, to be honest, I don't really know much about. So maybe in preseason they could make names for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
And if they do something throughout the preseason and spark, you know, earn a roster spot, they could end up being worthwhile. But for now, I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I would stick with Cooks, Woods, Kupp, and Reynolds as the four Rams receivers to target. You know, like I said, unless you're in a super deep league, then, you know, I would maybe consider Mike Thomas or even Webster. Those are the two that I actually kind of like to at least hold a roster spot through the preseason.
And then in regards to tight end, they have Tyler Higbee, they have Gerald Everett, both fairly young tight ends. Everett, the second round draft pick 3 years ago in 2017, so he'll be entering his third season. And he was a high draft pick. He's very athletic. With limited action, he has actually shown well as a receiver. So he's, I'd say, the one with more upside. And McVay's been really talking him up a lot this offseason. So he's someone to keep on your radar. You know, with the slim pickings at tight ends, it's always worth noting a still young tight end, high draft pedigree that's good athletic profile that could potentially break out. Higbee, he's had his chances. He's only 1 year older than Everett, so he's still fairly young. Great athletic profile as well, but he's been more involved and hasn't done that much with the work that he's had. So I'd say for me, I'd take Everett over Higbee, but I think both are kind of worth stashing at a cheap price to kind of see how it works out in this offense.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I have a slight favoritism towards Higbee, but for the most part, I mean, you hit everything about both of them right on the head. They're definitely I don't see these I don't see either one as a tight end that's going to produce very much for you. You know, these are definitely, I mean, guys that you would want to stash as backups to whoever you may start, whether it be a Kittle, a Kelsey, or Zach Ertz, you know, guys that you just basically just to add for depth. They're not going to be guys that are going to produce solid numbers week in and week out for you. If these are guys that you're looking at,
and if you got a team that doesn't have one of those top three tight ends that Chris mentioned, then you could be looking, hey, does Gerald Everett take the step where I can play him on certain weeks where I got maybe a Mark Andrews season in the bye week, or I got a, you know, one of these other tight ends that doesn't have the big name, but you're, you know, kind of Trey Burton here, yeah, and then Kyle Rudolph here, but then you can put Everett in depending on the matchup or bye weeks or, you know, things like that.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, exactly. They're just kind of depth guys, bye week fillers, with the potential to maybe break out. You know, just I'm going to sound like a broken record, but tight end is definitely the hardest position to draft in fantasy. It's just, it's such a hard position to predict consistency and even elite tight ends out of. It's one of those kind of, you know, if you find them, count your lucky stars, because they're very hard to find.
And this year we got a couple of rookies with Noah Fant and T.J. Hockenson, a couple of young first round rookies, and it's guys where, you know, there's hype over them for rookie drafts, and you know, guys want to know, hey, you know, are these guys that I can plug in right away, or are they guys that I'm gonna have to wait on? And I think both of them have an opportunity to start right away and actually perform, but it's absolutely, you know, you gotta kind of have your expectations a little lower.
Yeah, because otherwise,
for,
you know,
immediate need.
Yeah, otherwise we run into another Eric Ebron situation, or even Max Williams from a couple of years ago, where there was all this hype around these tight ends coming out. And, you know, like we saw with Ebron, it took him, you know, a change of scenery for him to come out on his own. And now Max Williams out of Baltimore and Arizona,
well,
which
funny,
we'll get to eventually here.
You mentioned Ebron, and he, you know, he's a guy where he was drafted 10 overall to Detroit, and then 10 overall they take T.J. Hockenson,
right,
another
so,
tight end. So I don't think they feel the same about him, because Hawkinson's more of a pure tight end who can block as
absolutely,
well and get dirty, whereas Ebron was more of your receiving tight end. And
right.
So it's, even though they're both tight ends, it's a different scope. But to go back and just recap the Rams here, we got Goff. You want him, especially in Superflex. If you're in a deep Superflex, Bortles may be on your radar, especially if you're a Goff or owner and you want to cuff him, if you do that in some of your deep Superflex.
Yeah.
You got
emphasis
Gurley
on the deep league for sure.
Yeah, you got Gurley. You got Daryl Henderson, rookie, had a great, you know, great career at Memphis. He had great combine, 4.49 40, 22 bench, 33.5 vert. He's a shorter guy. He's only 5'8", 208 pounds though, so he's pretty dense as far as body mass. And he's a guy that, you know, could be the guy. So that, you know, just to kind of go over that, it's just something where you invest in him if you think he's going to become their future. But
yeah,
otherwise, at his cost, if you think he's just going to, you know, some report came out that said that he thinks he's like a Chris Thompson role. And if that's what he is at that price, I do not want it. So it's something where you got to, you know, make your take as far as, is he a future starter in the NFL, which
yeah,
I don't think he is, but he could be. Malcolm Brown, John Kelly, deep leagues, you can have them on your radar. Receivers, we all want Cooks, Cup, Woods, Reynolds, you want in deeper leagues. And then if you got a guy that you like on the back end of that, you could have in super deep leagues that could crack the lineup, go for it. But we're not, Chris and I aren't taking any. And then tight ends, Everett and Higbee, they're, you know, not a ton to speak for, but we like Everett over Higbee, and he could be a guy that comes out this year. So I think next we should get into the Arizona Cardinals, and we'll go directly into the number one overall pick, Kyler Murray. What do you think about him in super flex leagues?
Sure, play baseball. no, but in all seriousness, in a super flex league, if it's a startup super flex league, I'm not taking him number one overall. In a rookie draft, yes, just because it is a super flex league. I like him. He's got a lot of talent. He was definitely the best quarterback, I thought, in this year's draft class for sure. Kid is super talented. Definitely going to be one to watch in his rookie year. I don't think he comes out as strong as a lot of people are saying he's going to, but he's definitely a guy you want on your roster. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The kid's a stud. You know, I just think it may take him a year or two. I just hope Arizona doesn't brush him off as quickly as they did Rosen. I still think they did Rosen dirty, but that's a whole nother discussion.
And I they're invested in him with one overall. Cliff Kingsbury,
yep,
has a history with him. And I think that he is personally a much better talent than Josh Rosen. I think he's,
yep,
got a great future in the league.
Absolutely.
Multi-dimensional. He can run the ball great. He's, you know, if you guys have seen the video of him racing Andy Isabella, he's just as fast as him. He can hurl it. You know, his his college, you know, although it was just 1 year, he had a fantastic arm that he displayed at all levels. He can throw the deep ball. He can throw on the run. He can really do it all. So for him, it's just a matter of getting an understanding of playing at the NFL level against NFL defenses.
Absolutely. You know,
coverages, shifts. So there's a lot that goes into it, but I think, you know, with not having the expectation of them to win the Super Bowl or go to the playoffs this year, I think he's a guy that if you can get, you know, in your rookie draft, I'd take him 101 in the super flex. I'd take him at the back end of the first round in a standards rookie draft. And then in startups, you know, he's going to be a kind of a, if it's super flex, he's going to be in the probably second to fifth round. Standard, depending on how many teams in standard, you're going to be looking at him later in the draft, but he's definitely a guy with upside if that's what you're looking for. And you got, you know, some veterans that you can plug in as well. Behind Kyler Murray, we have Brett Hundley, who he's been a good backup where he's been. He was in Green Bay, he was in Seattle. And I think he's just a solid backup is what he'll be for his career. And I think behind him, there's no one noteworthy in the quarterbacks.
I think you're still giving Brett Hundley too much credit as a solid backup. I have not been a fan of his really ever. But, yeah, he's a career backup quarterback. And as far as Arizona's roster is concerned, he's going to be the number two there. And if you're hurting really bad in a deep, deep league,
you might consider having him
on the roster, but
otherwise nobody.
Really, Kyler Murray is the only quarterback in Arizona you want on your roster. That's really the cut and dry of it.
Getting into the running backs, David Johnson, when he's healthy, he's been a stud, a star in this league, and a lot of people want to see him in the Cliff Kingsbury offense if he's gonna go back to that rookie year where he was catching tons of balls. And I think this year he could potentially catch a lot more balls out of the backfield. He's a guy that can do it all. He can run you over. He can run around you. He's got the speed. Mm-hmm. He's got great change of direction, good hands. He's a little older in terms of how many years he's actually played in the league, but he's still a really good dynasty asset to have.
Yeah, it's just, fifth year in the league, he came in the league a little late as far as age is concerned, but he was definitely one of those guys I think a lot of teams had overlooked going into that draft, but he has performed well when healthy. He's definitely going to be a guy to watch this year. What's really going to determine David Johnson's production is how the rest of the league plays against Kyler Murray, and if I'm assuming they're going to come out of the gate and they're going to challenge him, in the sense that they may let him have kind of free reign a little bit in the secondary and just stack the box because they know David Johnson's their best offensive weapon.
They're going to have to respect Kyler, especially with these, we'll get into the receivers in a minute, but with the weapons that they have and the arm that he has and the speed that he has where he can extend plays, I think they're going to have to really respect Kyler and not just stack the box constantly.
No, and I'm with you there too, but with a rookie wide receiver, especially taking one overall, he's going to have to put in a little bit of work and really prove himself. And that's just where I think maybe for the first couple of weeks we see defenses kind of stack the box just to kind of see what Murray does, and then maybe make their adjustments at halftime and then come in at that. But the first couple of weeks of the regular season is really what we're going to see Kyler Murray as what he's made of, if he's really going to be cut out for the NFL. I think is really the first few weeks, and that might be too harsh.
I wouldn't judge it after.
I think that's a bit extreme.
I think you'll know how the offense is going to run. Yeah, what they're trying to do, what they're scheming, how Kingsbury wants to utilize him.
Yeah,
but I think
that's
they
more
may protect
what I was
him a little.
Say.
They may protect him a little to begin the season like Russell did as a rookie, Russell Wilson. They held him back. They did a lot more running safe passes, and then they opened up the playbook more as he went on. And that could happen throughout his rookie year. We'll see how much they let him do. But I think ultimately by the end of the year is when you'll have a better idea of how good he's going to be as a pro.
Yeah.
And I think he's got a bright future. So
no, I
Chase
think so
Edmonds is going to be the number two running back behind David Johnson. He was a fourth round draft pick last year.
Hot preseason last year.
He actually came in for a game last year and got two red zone touchdowns, two red goal line carries. And he's a guy he's on the smaller end. He can catch the ball well. He's a real good change of pace guy, and he can fill in if there's any injuries.
Clint Ferry's talking about kind of already having a role cut out for him in the regular season, so there's potential he could eat into David Johnson a little bit.
Well, I talked about having both of them on the field at the same time, so it might not eat in, but it might just be a scheme thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's just what I was going to say is, even with him, getting a role cut out for him, I wouldn't be too concerned if you're a David Johnson owner about Edmonds taking away work from Johnson, just with, the fact that Johnson is, he's the lead back, clear cut, Chase Edmonds, he's the guy that if nobody has him, it's definitely a guy I would be looking at to have on your roster.
And he gets a premium with PPR too. And
absolutely.
I think all of the skill guys on the Cardinals get a PPR premium. And behind David Johnson and Chase Edmonds, they have TJ Logan, who's a smaller pass catching back, really deep leagues you could consider him, but mainly you want to just think about Chase Edmonds, David Johnson, primarily running backs for the Arizona Cardinals.
Absolutely.
Going into the receivers, which is where there's a lot of potential here. Larry Fitzgerald, the obvious number one, future Hall of Famer. And Christian Kirk, second rounder from last year. And he's a smaller receiver. He doesn't have the same large profile like Fitzgerald does, but he's got about the same build as Odell Beckham, and that's probably his ceiling in the league, which is a very high ceiling at that. Really like him. He's the one I want to own out of this receiving core for the Cardinals in Dynasty Leagues. Behind them, you have the three rookies in Andy Isabella, drafted in the second round, Hakeem Butler, drafted in the fourth round, and Keyshawn Johnson, drafted in the sixth round. Who do you like out of the receivers on the Cardinals for Dynasty purposes?
Gotta go Kirk, number one. And he's obviously the heir apparent to Larry Legend, so there's no question there that I'm going to be targeting Christian Kirk as my first option in this young receiving corps for Arizona. And then right behind him, I got to go Andy Isabella. Just with his speed and his hands, he's gonna put up some numbers. He's definitely going to be an asset to have, especially if you're in a PPR scoring format. He's definitely going to be probably the number two guy you're going to want out of Arizona for sure.
And I think there's a lot of Andy Isabella hype, and I wasn't a big fan of his. When I watched his tape, I saw a Michael Campanaro kind of player who was from Wake Forest. The Ravens got him. He was ultimately a special teamer and a depth guy. But at the combine after that, Isabella did run a 4.3 40, and much faster than the comparison I just gave. And I think he's probably more of a polished receiver as well. Just a guy that I'm really not feeling the hype as many as others are, though. But I know he does have major upside with Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury being that fast, ability to play in the slot, get a ton of targets, and he ultimately had a large reception total in college. So he's someone to look out for, and he could surprise me in terms of production. I guess it wouldn't surprise me that much with his draft pedigree and all the other factors, but not one of my primary targets in the early second round of rookie drafts. The other two, I do like Keyshawn Johnson better than Hakeem Butler. I think he's worth a third round rookie pick. And I think Hakeem Butler, he was one of the two guys based on their ADP pre-draft that I knew I would not have any shares of, being Hakeem Butler, who had an ADP of top five, and then Kelvin Harmon, who had an ADP of probably late first round before the draft. Post-draft, both of them have dropped down. Hakeem Butler's still being drafted in the early second round of rookie drafts, and that's too high for me. I'm not a big fan of his ability to create separation. He does have the size that you would want, but I don't feel like he fully uses his size to position himself against defenders. His hands have been in question at times, and he's just someone that I'm not buying. I do like Keyshawn Johnson a lot, though. He's a polished route runner, great hands.
Yep.
He's just really he seems like a pro-ready receiver as a rookie out of Fresno State, and I like his build, his ability to run routes. He's just someone that I am investing in.
Yeah, no, as far as between Butler and Johnson, I'm definitely with you there on Keyshawn. You know, really the only thing Butler, you know, impressed me with was his speed. I mean, he's, you know, a tad faster than Johnson. You know, Butler ran a 4.440, whereas Johnson's a 4.5. You know, I mean, granted, we're, you know, splitting hairs at that point, but Keyshawn's
and that,
definitely...
that does make a big difference.
It does.
4.4, 4.5.
Yeah, so, I mean, but at the end of the day... Keyshawn's definitely the more polished. He's definitely the third receiver I would be targeting as a out of the Arizona receiving core. That is, you know, I'm still going Kirk, and then I'm going Andy Isabella. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid on Isabella. I know a lot of people are higher on Keyshawn in some respects, but I got to go Kirk and then Isabella.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people fell in love with the size and athletic profile of Butler, and he has major upside, 6'5", 227, running that 4.440, and he's someone that could turn into something special, but he's just someone that I've been avoiding. I think behind those five, you got guys like Pharaoh Cooper, who could be fighting for a role as a special teams guy. You have Kevin White, a failed first-round pick for the Bears that I don't see making the team. You have Chad Williams, a failed third-round pick for the Cardinals that I think the new coaching staff will move on from. So I think ultimately, you know, Trent Sherfield and Pharaoh Cooper might be fighting for that one of those last spots. I guess Kevin White could surprise and make a splash and, you know, be able to hold on to a depth role, but... none of those guys are guys that I'm really looking to add to any of my dynasty rosters.
Yeah.
Okay, so tight ends, I guess I'll let you get into it, Chris. I know Ricky Seals-Jones has got a lot of hype from a lot of people in dynasty community. Max Williams was a highly drafted second-round pick a few years ago by the Ravens. Charles Clay's on the pup, and Caleb Wilson, a seventh-round pick this year. Who do you like for your dynasty roster?
I got to go with Max Williams. You know, I had the hype. You know, I kind of believed the hype around him a little bit when he was drafted by the Ravens just a couple of years ago. You know, granted, he never lived up to expectations, but I think the change of scenery, change of offense – and, you know, you put a bright, budding young star in there, you know, the tight end has always kind of been the safety blanket for the younger quarterbacks lately. So I wouldn't be surprised if Max Williams actually starts to become a viable tight end option. Granted, you know, tight end, it's one of those tricky positions. You know, there's always potential upside. But if I had to pick between the two, you know, I'm looking at tight end depth. I'm looking at a potential guy to fill in bye weeks. I'm definitely picking Max Williams over Ricky Seals. I've never been a Ricky Seals believer.
And you know, you could be right. Max Williams is still only 25. He's entering his fifth year in the league. When he came out of Minnesota, he was the first tight end drafted in 2015, second round pick. He dealt with injuries and that kind of derailed his career. And then when he was healthy, he just didn't live up to becoming a feature tight end. Three down tight end for the Ravens. So he's a guy that, you know, with more experience under his belt, growth, time to overcome some injuries, develop as a pro, he could actually, you know, take this opportunity to move on to another team and benefit from it. I think, you know, for me, I like the upside of Ricky Seals-Jones a little more. He's, you know, he's 24, so he's right in the same age, but he's more of a receiving tight end. You know, he's only 243 pounds at 6'5", and at A&M, he was primarily, you know, catching the ball. So he's a guy that, you know, I'm not a huge fan. I'm not buying either of them, but I guess if I had to take one of them, I'd go with RSJ here. So quickly, we will go straight into the San Francisco 49ers. And this is a team that I don't like in terms of their opportunity for success this year. I also don't like a lot of their players for fantasy purposes, redraft or dynasty. I think primarily the biggest assets that I would invest in here would be some of their receivers. But other than that, and obviously George Kittle, I think he's one of the best tight ends in the league. But going into the quarterback position, Jimmy Garoppolo and Nick Mullins, who filled in last year for the injured Garoppolo. I think Garoppolo is a middle-of-the-road quarterback. I'm not a big fan of his. What are your thoughts on him, Chris?
I'm definitely a fan of Garoppolo. I mean, he's definitely middle-of-the-road kind of quarterback, especially if you're in a startup dynasty league. You know, he's not one of those quarterbacks that you got to be that's got to go off the board real quick. He's definitely one of those guys I think you'll be able to steal in the later rounds and get some value out of. Just because he's still got some things to prove, but the potential is there. And I'm a huge fan of what this offense has the potential to do in the next year, actually next couple of years. You know, we may even see flashes of it, even with how banged up they are.
Well, and, you know, I know a lot of people like the Kyle Shanahan offense, being the offensive coordinator and head coach there. And he's definitely brought in weapons
for sure.
The past couple of years. So there's guys that he's drafted to work in his scheme, you know, that could potentially work out for them. I mean, through the draft and free agency, we'll go right into Tevin Coleman and the running backs. You know, for me, I've not been a fan of Tevin Coleman. I think he's got speed, but I think he goes down upon first contact. He's not a tough runner, doesn't make a lot of moves. If there's a big wide lane, he will take advantage of it, and he'll, you know, hit the home run for the touchdown. But for just the ability to be a feature back, for the ability to do some of the things that I would want of a back, which is not only just speed and some change of direction, but vision and moves to cut back, ability to run through arm tackle, stiff arm, spin, put moves together, run with aggression. I don't see it. So I think he's more of a guy that could play in a committee part-time. And then you got McKinnon, who got the big contract, which he probably didn't deserve when he was kind of underwhelming in Minnesota, and he's also already got another knee injury, so we'll see what happens there. And then Matt Breida, who's had some injury concerns himself, who filled in good and looked good, but he also didn't look to be a feature back to me. So for me, it seems like three potential guys. It could be just the two of them if McKinnon's injury is as serious as it could be. And then, you know, they had Mostert and, you know, some of these guys that are just depth guys, Jeff Wilson, Mostert, guys that could potentially be cuts if other guys are healthy.
Yeah, no, I think you're pretty accurate about Coleman. You know, I actually liked him in his early years with in Atlanta, you know, and you know, when he came into the league in just a few years ago, playing in Atlanta, he worked with Kyle Shanahan. He already knows Shanahan's playbook, and understands how he's going to call the offense. So that to me, that does give Coleman the slight edge as being the number one back in the backfield. As being a true bell cow feature back, it's not there. You're right. I mean, he doesn't have the power to run through guys. You know, he can catch the ball in the backfield, which definitely helps him, but he's definitely going to be split in time. You know, I envision a 60-40 split. You know, best case scenario for Coleman is a 70-30, but I think it's going to be more of a 60-40. I see Matt Breida filling that number two role behind Coleman. You know, the first opportunity probably will be oh, my God, I am having a brain fart. I'm sorry, folks. It will probably be McKinnon.
If healthy.
But really, the only reason he's going to get that first shot is based on his contract.
And I think I'm using that connection with Kyle Shanahan for Coleman and the, you know, listing him as the number one back as a time to sell him in Dynasty if I have any shares of him.
Yeah.
And get what I can for him. He could be a guy that could flex for you if you're a contender and you don't have a lot of running back depth to make a run this year. But I don't see a long-term upside there. I think San Fran actually drafts a running back in 2020. Mm-hmm. And that stacked 2020 class, getting, you know, a Jonathan Taylor guy, and Najee Harris, you know, Benjamin,
yeah,
DeAndre Swift, right. You know, just yeah, all ETN.
Exactly, yeah, because, I mean, as far as the backs that they have on their depth chart, I don't really see any of these guys as a full-fledged feature back.
Right.
Matt Breida, I think, is the closest to that. You know, he performed exceptionally well last year, even with a bummed ankle.
But he's only 180 pounds, and he's got those right, injuries, and he's got the concern that you have with kind of a Philip Lindsay, where it's a small guy,
right.
Is he going to be durable?
You know, but I mean, even in the limited amount of time, I mean, even with a banged up ankle, he still averaged, you know, almost 5.5 yards per carry. You know, granted, you know, it was what hurt him too, is he wasn't finding the end zone. But I mean, a guy that can average, you know, 5 yards a carry for you in the NFL, even with a bummed up ankle, he's going to be an asset, especially in fantasy football, as a very strong potential flex option. You know, if you need that, and I think, you know, could potentially be, you know, he could very well even take over for Tevin Coleman, even if Coleman's healthy. I could see the potential there for Breida to take over that backfield and be the number one.
And he could, but I think if Coleman's healthy, it's going to be a timeshare.
I mean, regardless.
Best case would be, you know, like you said, 60-40 in Breida's favor at that rate. And I don't think either of them are going to be consistent. I don't think.
Yeah, I don't see a
if
true...
I'm going to invest in anybody on this team, it'd be the receivers. And I think.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, getting into the receivers, we got Dante Pettis, drafted in the second round last year. And he was a premier punt returner at University of Washington, and he showed looks of that last year too with San Fran. You got him. They invested heavily in Debo Samuel this year, a second-round pick this year. Jalen Hurd, third-round pick this year. So there's young receivers that have been brought in. Last year they drafted Richie James in the seventh round. Trent Taylor came in 2017 in the fifth round, so he's still relatively young. And then kind of more of their veteran presence. They have Marquise Goodwin, and they have Jordan Matthews still, which, you know, he could end up getting cut. But Marquise Goodwin, he's the one who won the 40 yards of gold competition this offseason. Really fast track guy. He's been around for a number of years. He's about 28 now. But he can burn it, and he'll probably have a spot on this roster, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would imagine a spot for him too. You know, currently they have him sitting as, you know, the number one on the right side, opposite of Pettis. But again, this is just early depth chart rating. So, you know, I mean, especially with the performances we saw out of Debo tonight and even Hurd, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those two guys showed up as the number two, you know, behind Pettis. Pettis is going to be the guy you're going to want in dynasty drafts. As far as young wide receivers to be looking at, you know, in startups, I'd be looking at him in, you know, eighth round, seventh round, you know, kind of a, he's just because there are so many options with wide receivers in a startup dynasty draft, but he's definitely a guy you do not want to overlook. You know, he performed really well with Nick Mullins, you know, last year, and just with Garoppolo coming back, this offense is definitely going to be very. It's going to be a fun one to watch.
And down the stretch, Pettis really came on strong as a receiver.
Yes.
And he was producing as a rookie, which is promising. I do like Debo's athletic profile better. I think he's a guy that's more versatile. They can do more things with, and I think he could end up being a really big piece of this offense that's used in a lot of different ways. And kind of get more to that versatility is Jalen Hurd, who, you know, he actually, you know, started as a running back, ended up transferring. He ended up becoming a wide receiver for Baylor. But, he, you know, first he started out in Tennessee, went to Baylor. He's shown that he can run the ball. He can catch really well. He's a big guy. He's 6'5", 226, really fast. But he's a guy that there's been rumors he could even line up at tight end. So it'll be interesting to see how they move him around, how they get him involved, because I think he will have a presence and he will be a part of this kind of a different weapon for Kyle Shanahan. They already have Kittle at tight end, but just another guy to move around, line up in different formations.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of Kittle, he's going to be the first guy you're going to target from the 49ers, even ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo. Kittle, you know, with his emergence last year.
Well, in Superflex, it might be fairly close between the two.
This is
especially
true.
In like a 16-team Superflex.
Right.
But Kittle's, his value skyrocketed.
Kittle, with his huge season he had last year, has definitely, I think, proved himself to be mentioned with Travis Kelce as far as one of the top tight ends in the league. You know, me as well as many others view Kittle and Kelce as the 1A, 1B, with Kelce being the 1A, Kittle being 1B. And then right behind him, you got Zach Ertz. You know, those are going to be the three tight ends you're going to target. And Kittle, being the younger of the three by far, I think definitely has the slight edge.
And I've heard that. I've heard people saying that Kittle is their top dynasty tight end due to age and performance. although it's been a few years, it's not as long of a, track record of good performance, but he has shown it. He has elite athleticism. He didn't even have Garoppolo last year.
Nope.
The weapons, they could help him. They could spread out the offense. Some people think they'll take targets away, but it could also take coverage away. So I think Kittle's a good tight end, a great tight end, a good one to own in dynasty.
Yeah, the other thing too with Kittle, with everybody saying that, with the arrival of Samuel and Hurd, that with just having so many mouths to feed, that it could potentially take targets away. Well, if you look at some of the stats even from last year, is that Kittle, he received 25% of it, he lined up 25% of the time in the slot. So the fact that they can even move him around and put him out there too, with as big of a target as he is, I think he's going to be the true, number one, number two target in that passing game. It'll be him and Pettis, I think, are going to be the top two. And then Samuel and Hurd are going to be kind of fighting for that third target share, I think.
And and for them, it'll be their rookie development. And especially Jalen Hurd, I don't expect a lot from him year one. He could surprise me. I think Samuel, they'll try to get involved right away. I think if there's a guy, if you're trying to make a championship run, you could get Marquise Goodwin fairly cheap due to his age, due to all these new targets, and he could help you produce depending on the rookie progress for some of these young receivers. Trent Taylor's gotten some hype, and smaller slot guy, kind of a Wes Welker comparison, and he's he's someone I'm not really looking at.
Yeah,
for any of my spots. Richie James, I don't want. Jordan Matthews, I've been done with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, really, Dante Pettis, Debo, Jalen Hurd, Marquise Goodwin, those are going to be the four receivers you're really going to be looking at when it comes time to draft, with Dante Pettis being the number one option. And then really just seeing, depending on when you draft, Debo and Hurd could be, the 2-3 option. There, it's just going to be one of those time will tell thing as the preseason goes and we get some more and we get to see some more of them perform in game action here.
And in deep leagues, maybe Trent Taylor and PPR, maybe Jordan Matthews if he makes the team. He could even be a cut, but he was a guy that he's got the profile. He's had all these injuries and ups and downs in his career, but. If he does make the team in a super deep league, he could have value. I don't really see it for Richie James or Kendrick Bourne, but in real deep leagues, I guess you could monitor them and see how preseason unfolds.
And then just to update Trent Taylor, if you are eyeing him in a super deep league, I'd take him super late. Just with the news coming out tonight of the emergence that he had, he broke his foot and had surgery to insert a screw. That's, that almost sidelines him for the year.
So, you know, don't expect really anything out of him much this year, but he's definitely a guy.
So you could stash him on your IR if you have IR spots.
Yeah, he could definitely be a guy with some potential there, you know, in a super deep league just as a stash for a year or two and see what he does. But I wouldn't expect anything out of him.
Yeah,
this year.
I didn't know about that news tonight, just breaking. So that's, you know, definitely something where, you know, you look at the other guys and say, okay, the ones we were already talking about ahead of them are definitely going to be the guys you want for this year and probably moving forward. But it does open up the opportunity for, you know, hey, Jordan Matthews, Richie James, maybe Kendrick Bourne, a couple of those guys probably making the team. Two out of those three, I would imagine. So last roster spots, maybe. Behind Kittle, we already talked about Kittle. He's a great guy to own in Dynasty. Depending on as far as the price has gone, he's almost a guy I would sell if you're willing to get as much as some of these trades I've seen go down. Just the value you can get for him. But behind him, they have Ross Dwelly, who's someone who's gotten some hype as a number two tight end. They drafted Caden Smith out of Stanford in the sixth round, and then in free agency, they brought in Levine Toilolo. And he's a guy that I think, Toilolo, that I think he'll end up getting cut.
Yeah.
You know, and then Garrett Selleck's on the pup list, but, I mean, Kittle's who you want. If you're getting somebody behind him, I guess Dwelly's a guy that they like, and then Smith being the rookie out of Stanford, you know, you could take a flyer on him in deep leagues.
Yeah, and then just to touch on what Paul was saying about selling Kittle high, I'm kind of against that just because, again, I know I've been repeating it, but tight end is such a tough position to have in Dynasty, and it's, you know, it's a true commodity that when you find a guy like a Kittle, a Travis Kelce, a Zach Ertz, a Dallas Goedert with the strong potential there for him. You know, it's hard to let those guys go. And, yeah, you might be able to get quite a bit in return, but it's really going to come down to how your team is set up. You know, if you're not, you know, if you're kind of middle of the road where, you know, you might be hurting at wide receiver depth or maybe running back depth, something like that, then, yeah, maybe that's where, you know, and you've got a decent backup tight end or two, you know, like an Austin Hooper, or even you know, Eric Ebron behind Kittle to go with it, then sell Kittle. But if you're hurting tight end depth and you're still doing okay, you know, that your team can compete, I would still hold on to Kittle. He's gonna
be. And what I mean by that is if you're getting because I like OJ Howard a lot, I like David Njoku a lot. They're both younger tight ends that I think will take the next step this year. They're less proven, but I think you could get one of those guys plus either a starting wide receiver three or a 2020 draft pick or something that can add a lot of value, whereas I think OJ Howard could surpass Kittle this season on the Dynasty rankings.
The potential's there for Howard, but again, like you were saying, they're unproven, and you know, that's the thing too with tight end. It's one of those, until they take that step, it's all hearsay, and it's all kind of just getting your hopes up that these guys that have had all this hype talked about them coming into the draft and going into fantasy drafts, that every year we hear it's like, oh, this is going to be their year, and then they never do it.
Well, and that's the fun of it, making the call yourself and seeing if you're going to buy on a guy, if you're going to sell high on a guy, buy low on a guy, and that's the opportune time. If you think Kittle's going to stay as good as he's been, then hold. If, you know, for me, if I think this is probably the height of his value, you know, where now they have these other targets, and I think it could help him, but I also think that with his youth and how much value he has in some circles, I mean, if your league's not going to pay you a lot for him, then hold, try to win it all if you're a contender with him, you know, along those lines. But if you're able to get a lot of good return on him, I think it's a decent time to sell him.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of those things. You got to do what's best for your team and make the move that's gonna put you up with the best opportunity to win your league. Because that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. You know, you got to make sure you're not killing yourself trying to, you know, fix your team by selling super high on one guy and not getting the full return you should be getting on him.
And I think that will wrap it up for the 49ers and for the NFC West as a whole. So yeah. From Chris and Paul, we're going to thank you guys for listening, for joining us. We'll be back for more episodes. We will review the other divisions.
Yep.
And then just as the season progresses, we will touch back and buys and lows, buy lows, you know, sells, guys that we're trying to trade for, guys we're trying to trade away.
Yeah.
But primarily
free agent pickups.
Yeah, know. Yeah, everything. So until next time, thank you.
C'est la vie.